I'm Brad Locke.
I'm Gene Phelps.
I'm Blake Morgan, and this is Prep Rally,
a podcast covering high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. Hello, everybody. Welcome into a new episode of Prep Rally, a podcast produced by the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal and djournal.com. Talking high school sports in Northeast Mississippi every week, normally coming to you on Wednesdays, but Wednesday was kind of busy for us, National Signing Day, of course, so coming to you a little later than normal, but we've got plenty to talk about. I'm your host, Brad Locke, joined by Blake Morgan. Gene Phelps not with us because, while he's not sick, he might be soon. Apparently, Gene got exposed to the flu, Blake, and
yeah.
He thought it would be a good idea if he was not in this small room with us.
I got to thank him for that.
I agree.
So, thank you, Gene. Shout out.
So Blake and I will carry on without Gene for this episode. Kind of a lot of different things to talk about. Normally, it's a lot of basketball talk, and we'll certainly have that. But as I mentioned, we had National Signing Day and had some local guys sign with D1 schools. I want to talk about that. And we've got soccer playoffs still going on. Got some teams in the finals. I do want to remind you, you can find this show a variety of ways. Of course, we're in iTunes. We're in any of your podcast apps like Stitcher, Player.fm, Satchel. Also, you can stream it online, preprally.djournal.com. And we're on Twitter, at DJournalPreps. Well, football is king in Mississippi, Blake, so let's start with football, huh?
Works for me.
Yeah. Let's talk about signing day. Of course, a lot of people paying attention, obviously, to what Mississippi State and Ole Miss were up to. But you had some local kids that signed D1 that didn't sign with State or Ole Miss. I mean, you had Willie Gay. He's probably one of the best players in the area. He signed with State.
Yeah.
So there's a local guy that went to one of those schools. But again, some guys that went elsewhere. Monterio Hunt, one of them. We'll start with him. A former MSU commit, Blake, and I think he had been for a while until
he committed in March.
Yeah,
And then decommitted January the 8th.
Yeah, so just late in the process for that. So he had to go and find another school pretty quick, and ended up at Marshall, which has always been a pretty solid program up there in West Virginia. So it's a long way from home. But
I looked it up today, 8.5 hour car ride from here.
Really? Thought it would be more.
I honestly thought it would be a lot more as well. But yeah,
okay.
8.5, so I mean, it's doable in a day. I mean, I used to go from Knoxville to Memphis. It was 6 hours.
And yeah, true. Yeah. So
not going to lie, I did hate that, though. So I don't know. 8.5 would be long.
Yeah, it would be. But hopefully he'll do well up there. Monterio, I mean, he was just a star at Walnut. He did everything, offense, defense. He caught passes. He ran the ball. Put up some big numbers. What's he going to do at Marshall?
He's going to be playing wide receiver, which is what he was going to be playing at Mississippi State. He really ran the ball a lot more at Walnut than caught passes, but I think that was largely because it's easier to get the ball in your playmaker's hands when you just hand it off to him as opposed to trying to throw it.
And he's got more of that wide receiver build, doesn't
he? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he definitely fits way more of a wide receiver kind of guy. Excited to see what he goes and does. He had it down between Marshall and UT Martin and ultimately picked Marshall because, you know, he wanted to play D1. And, you got to admire that. That's what he set out as his goal to be a few years ago, and
yeah,
was able to follow through with that.
Did he talk much about why he decided to decommit from MSU after being committed so long?
He said they just kind of started feeling going separate ways. And he said God was just leading him in a different direction, and ultimately decided to open it back up. And I mean, you know, like that's late in the process.
Yeah, very much. And you never know what all goes on behind the scenes with all that stuff with between coaches and players.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully this will be a good situation for Monterio Hunt. Another local guy that went D1, Zay Cullens, is going to play for Memphis, which I think we were expecting that, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. He's been committed to them since before the football season. He really committed to them once shortly after Norvell and his staff got in at Memphis, which was around the end of March, I believe. So it was right around then because Zay said that Norvell jumped on him quick.
Right.
So he had been committed to Memphis for a while.
Yeah, and you know, he's known more for his offense. Very good running back at North Pontotoc. But also got it done on defense as a linebacker. He's going to play, I guess, in the secondary at Memphis?
Yeah, going to be playing likely in a strong safety linebacker mix, which...
He's got that build, too. He's about six foot 200,
yeah,
something like that.
Absolutely. He played that similar role in the Blackwell All-Star game, which I went down to watch in Gulfport, and I was really impressed with how he played there, because I only saw him once at North Pontiac, and he's playing safety, and... I was like, nah, I don't know if he's going to work out as a safety in college. But watching him play up closer to the line in kind of a free-form role, he really excelled in that role. Okay. I think he has a lot of potential. He said, you know, he liked Memphis because they were offering him a chance to come in and play very soon. He's going to have a shot at playing his freshman year.
It's close to home, a lot closer than Marshall.
Close to home. It's the best recruiting class in Memphis history. And he's part of it. So, you know, it's not like it was Memphis 5 years ago when they were just picking up guys to try to fill out a roster.
Yeah, Justin Fuente really got the ball rolling.
It's the best recruiting class out of any group of five team.
Right.
And he's on. So, that's a... it's a big honor.
Yeah, certainly. So congrats to Monterio Hunt and Zay Cullins headed to the next level. And then, you know, just quickly, briefly looking ahead to next year, I don't know how many local kids will have go D1, if it will be more than we had this year, but I know Tupelo's got some good prospects, including Jet Johnson, a junior linebacker. He's got another year left of high school. Has been a great player for Tupelo for the past couple of years. He's picked up some offers recently, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He very recently got an offer from Louisville, and that kind of kicked things off. And a lot of people are saying because of Peter Sermon was the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State and then went up to Louisville. And so the kind of thought was Sermon was looking at him at Mississippi State, went up to Louisville, and immediately offered him. That was Jet's first D1 offer. Immediately after that, Ole Miss offers him, and now South Alabama has offered him. And that's kind of how these things go. Once one is thrown out there, it kind of just piles up. So I would imagine Mississippi State, Southern, Memphis will all also offer him. So as Gene and I were talking about the other day, he's not going to be worrying about D1 offers at this point. Now he's got to worry about where is he going to take his five visits, because he's going to get so many Division I offers, which is exciting to see. Peter Gray likely will get some looks as well. And Gene was saying, you know, because he transferred in this past year.
Yeah, from Texas. And he's got another year left.
Yeah, he has another year left as well. He's going into his senior year. And so Gene was saying, you know, it's got to hurt with the Mississippi coaches just because he hadn't been around as long. And I said, well, you know what will probably help him out is coaches are going to come see Jet.
Yeah.
And Peter Gray jumps off the field when you watch him. So I think Peter will benefit from having Jet around.
Yeah, and Jet, of course, is the 2016 Daily Journal Defensive Player of the Year. So he'll be a front runner for that award again next year. Part of that great linebacking core that Tupelo had this past year, which also included Diesel Howell. Now, he's graduating, but you're still going to have Johnson and Gray back. I don't know who else they'll have, but I think that's probably shaping up to be another really good unit again.
Yeah, they have, and then they also have some rising sophomores and juniors that will likely get Division I looks down the line. So the Tupelo defense will be, once again, very good.
Yes, no doubt. Let's switch gears and talk a little hoopage here, Blake. Let's look back at a handful of games and performances from the past week. Back on Tuesday, Tupelo's girls in action. They needed to beat Columbus by, 4 points? Five points to win the division. They won by 11. Of course, you get into all those weird tiebreakers and whatnot. Yeah. And so they got the job done there. And back on Saturday at the Robertson's Sportswear Lady Challenge in Boonville, really good matchup with Lafayette, one of the other really good teams in the area. They won that one in overtime, 68-64. I know you were at the Columbus game, though. Mm-hmm. And, looking like they've looked all season, pretty much.
Yeah, they're just an interesting team because I don't know if they've ever put together four good quarters all year, but they just go on these spurts where they are just world beaters. And it was the same way against Columbus, where at the end of the first quarter, it was 12-12. End of the second quarter, it was 24-24. End of the third quarter, it was 39-37, and that was only because Tupelo hit a layup as time expired in the third quarter. And then Tupelo just goes off in the fourth quarter, and it was largely behind Scherer.
Elijah Scherer.
Yeah, having 18, I believe it was, in the fourth. And
28 for the game.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they just have a lot of potential, and for whatever reason, they just don't always reach their potential for a full game.
Yeah.
But at any game, they can just go off for one quarter, and especially in girls basketball, but just in high school basketball, I mean, if you have one great quarter, and that'll likely sustain you the entire game.
Sure. So Tupelo girls are now 19-5 overall, 5-1 in the division. That's Division 2-6A. And the boys won as well. They handled Columbus 60-40. They're now 6-0 in division. Have they clinched already?
Yeah, I believe so, because I think there's only six, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that should have they should have already have that in the bag there. And again, you know, it's that Tupelo boys team. You don't have a guy going out there scoring 28 like Scherer for the girls. You're usually going to have a lot of guys scoring between 10 and 15 points. In this case, Tajal Hereford scored 12 and was the leading scorer.
Yeah, right. He scored 12 and the leading scorer. It like, you know, you hear that just initially, and you're like, ah, well, that wasn't very good. But you see, literally, everyone else, you had like eight guys score between 8 points and 11.
Yeah, I mean, that's
how you get it.
That's an extremely balanced team.
Yeah, yeah,
team right
super
there.
Balanced. I have covered them maybe five or six times, and I think I've seen. I think Copeland's the only guy I've seen be the leading scorer twice.
Jalen Copeland, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's Nick Ratliff. It's you know, Tijal this last week. It's Copeland. You know, it's always someone else.
Yeah,
and you know, Norwood, he's still kind of juggling the lineup. I still don't know if he knows the right combo for this team. And, you know, it's got to be – it's hard to guard, but it's got to be a little bit hard to to coach, because you just – you don't have that go-to scorer, and on any night it's anyone. So you just got to kind of spend the entire game finding who has that hot
You kind of wonder – it's kind of a you know, you have a balance, which is good. I think that's what most coaches want. But on the other hand, you know, I guess they don't necessarily have a guy that can take over a game.
Right, exactly.
Like maybe late in a game. And maybe you don't need that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you do. Just maybe it's kind of a bit of a trade-off there. I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'm sure if you told him, would you like to have Jarkel Joyner, who you know if you're down by four late in the fourth, he's going to get you some buckets.
Yeah.
Or if you'd rather have seven guys that any one of them could go off. I mean, definitely a definitely a trade-off
as
their pros and cons.
Speaking of Jarkel Joyner, a guy who can go off and light things up, the Hotbed Classic was held Saturday in New Albany, most of it. The annual showcase event, I think it had like 11 games, a lot of teams from out of state.
Tried to have 11. One was canceled.
Yeah, because, well, here's what happened. We'll get to Jarkel in a second. Somebody from, was it Riverdale?
Honestly, I think it was Hamilton.
No, it was Hamilton Heights.
Yeah.
A player from Hamilton Heights shattered the backboard at New Albany.
Yep.
And so they had to move, I guess, the last couple of games over to Baldwin. Had to find some kind of solution in a hurry, and they managed to do that. So that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But Jarkel Joyner earlier in the day, he recorded yet another career high, 58 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah. His two career highs this year have been 52 at the Tingle on the Trail and now 58 at the Hotbed.
He likes these kind of events, huh?
Absolutely, and that's what I asked him about. And, you know, not to take credit, but I was at both the games, so I like to think I have a lot to do.
Like Blake Morgan's here, I better show out.
Yeah, better show
the
up.
The journal's here.
He said he loves playing in front of crowds, and these have been kind of the two biggest crowds of the year, and he likes putting on the show for... You know,
was that a scoring record for the Hotbed?
It was. It was. The former record was 45, which Jarkel had 42 through three quarters. So we kind of all knew he was going to break it. And, you know, I was telling everyone at the scorer's table, I was like, you know, his career high is 52. I bet he's gunning for that. And he was.
Wow, that's pretty good. Made 23 of 36 shots. Who are they playing again?
Brighton. A team from Tennessee, I believe.
Made 9 of 18 from behind the three-point line. That guy's good. Mm-hmm. Jarkel Joyner. We talk about him a lot on this show. Another really good player I want to mention, though, maybe we don't talk about as much as we should, DeAnthony Tipler. Mm-hmm. He and Ashland were in the hotbed as well. And he's one of the better players in the area and led them to a state title last year.
Yeah, led them to the state title. I'll have a story coming out tomorrow about how they're the favorites to do it again because Tipler's gotten better this season. And they just added a he transferred to the school and he's been sitting out due to eligibility stuff, but he's just now able to play. Kadarius Crum. He is a 6'6 center, which for 1A is
it's huge,
big,
literally.
Right. And I have a good quote in the story from Raleigh Tipler, the head coach, where I was like, it looked like there were some stretches where y'all's height and length gave them issues, and he was like, "Wait, you mean their height and length?" And I was like, "No, y'all." And he's like, "Yeah, I guess we do have Crum. I'm not used to people saying that we're tall." He didn't even know how to answer the question because he just hadn't been asked it till now. So, yeah, kind of talk about the rich getting richer. Tipler's, if he's not the best 1A player in the state, I'd be surprised to watch who is.
Yeah, yeah.
And now all of a sudden you probably have the tallest guy in this 1A.
One of the tallest, for sure.
Yeah, in 15 minutes, Crum had it was 6 points and 7 rebounds.
Wow, that's pretty productive.
Yeah, and, it just kind of adds a new dimension to what they can do. And
sure.
Tipler doesn't miss a ton, but now they'll probably get the offensive rebound when he does.
There you go. So look out for Ashland again come state tournament time. Let's talk a little bit of soccer here, Blake. But before we get out of here, they got the state finals coming up this week. We got a few teams that have advanced and will play on Saturday. Oxford, both of their teams have advanced. They both played Germantown earlier this week. They both won. The girls won 6-1. The boys won 3-1. So coming up on Saturday at Madison Central, Oxford's girls will take on West Harrison. That's a 4:00 start on the schedule, and the boys will face West Jones. That's going to be a 6:00 start. Again, both of those games are at Madison Central. I believe each program has one state title. I think it's the boys, though, that it's been a while.
Yeah, since they've won. They've never won it at the same time.
Right.
Or in the same year. So they're going for history with that. Going to be honest, I don't know much about West Harrison or West Jones.
Well, no.
But the Oxford girls, man, they're clicking.
Yeah.
They're just tearing through teams.
I take that back. Oxford's boys did win it in 2013. That's the only time they won it, so it hadn't been that long. Oxford, both boys and girls will be there looking to win state.
I'll be covering
5A.
Those games.
You'll be at those games.
I'll be at those games.
So follow Blake on Twitter, at Blake Morgan DJ. Amory's boys saw their season come to an end Wednesday night in the 4A semifinals. They fell 2-1 to Florence. They got the good coverage from Melissa Metter of the Monroe Journal in the Daily Journal there. Good run by Amory. They've got a really good program over there and have had for years now, so one of the better programs. South Pontotoc girls, they're back in the 1-2-3A finals.
Once again,
they beat Moorville 2-1 on penalty kicks, and that was kind of hype as a clash of the titans, if you will, in 1-2-3A up here. South Pontotoc's been good for several years, and so they beat Moorville on the penalty kicks. Facing a familiar foe in the finals on Saturday, Sacred Heart. Now, this is South Pontotoc's fifth consecutive trip to the state final. They have not won it yet. So looking for their first title, and if my research is correct, they've lost to Sacred Heart 3 of those times, including last year.
they do not like Sacred Heart.
I wouldn't either.
No, and I mean, it's kind of reminds me a lot of Calhoun City in football with Bassfield, and, it took Bassfield getting taken out the round before for Calhoun City to finally win their state title. So hopefully South Pontotoc doesn't need that to happen because they're facing Sacred Heart again. But
yeah, maybe it'll be a different result there.
Yeah.
That game will start. That'll be at noon.
Brandon Shields
Saturday
for us.
Yeah, Brandon Shields
will
cover that.
Was going to be Gene, but
Gene's now
he might have a flu.
Gene might be on the injured reserve there with the flu. But that game's going to be in Clinton. At noon on Saturday. So there's your soccer update. Let's move on now to Athletes of the Week. We do this every week, recognizing a male and a female athlete for their accomplishments from the past week. Let's start with the female athlete of the week. It's going to be Oxford forward Morgan O'Connor. We're talking soccer. Morgan O'Connor, very good player. She had 4 goals in that win Tuesday, that 6-1 win against Germantown in the 5A semifinals. So Morgan O'Connor, very good young player there for the Lady Chargers. And, well, sticking with the Oxford theme, male athlete of the week, Blake?
Jarkel Joyner.
Oh, how about that?
58 points against again. Brighton. Yeah, right. You know, because I was trying to think. I think the only times we've given him Athlete of the Week was his career high on the Tangle. I think we just talk about him other times. I can't remember.
So is that the only other time? It seems like it's more than.
Yeah, it definitely does, and we might have, and I don't know. That might just be lazy on my part for picking Joyner. But
it's kind of hard not to when you score 58.
Yeah.
And then just an average game of 33 against Altila.
Yeah, 33 going under his season average of like 38.
He was off that night.
Off that night, but did lead him to a big win, which we didn't even talk about, but yeah, big win.
Yeah, because Saltillo had beaten them earlier in the season in division.
So that was big because Saltillo needed to win that game Tuesday, and then they'll play Friday against West Point, which they'll likely win that.
Because they lost to New Hope, so yeah. I guess they're – I'm not sure how the division race is now.
Well, now I think it'll – I think Oxford will play New Hope tomorrow, and I'm going from my memory, but I believe – so Oxford will play New Hope tomorrow, and I think if Oxford wins that, they'll be the number one seed.
That sounds right.
And then if Oxford loses and Saltillo wins, I think it'll come down to points.
Tiebreaker for points, yeah.
But if Saltillo had won that game Tuesday, they would have likely gone on and been the number one seed.
Okay.
So that was a – big game at home. Joyner off with 33 points, but
definitely
they
good
came
enough.
Away with a big 76-66 win.
All right, good deal. And that's it for this episode of Prep Rally. Do thank you for joining us. Normally coming to you every Wednesday, again, a little late this week due to National Signing Day. Again, you can find us on Twitter. We're at DJournalPreps. Do want to remind you to check out a couple of the other podcasts we produce here. Another sports podcast, Double Coverage with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry, talking Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports. New episodes every Thursday. You can find it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. And, of course, the memo. All things Northeast Mississippi news and entertainment with myself and W. Derek Russell. Episodes every Wednesday and Friday in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at memo.djournal.com. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more Prep Rally. For Blake Morgan, I'm Brad Locke. Y'all have a good one.